Listening to the Alpha Beta Partners Macro Podcast, hosted by me, Andrew Thompson. Morning, Asim. How are you?
Morning, Andrew. Not too bad. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, the year's really rolled on. We should have done this before now, and I feel a little bit guilty. We've all been really busy, and markets have moved forward, and I think it's a good opportunity now to update clients and listeners to our thoughts, views on markets as we approach the end of the year. The year started, I don't know, in almost scary fashion, didn't it? We saw 20% off US equities, and everyone was feeling a bit scared, and Elon Musk was stalking around with a chainsaw. It was really scary days. And then that seemed to change, and Elon sort of stood back and focused on other things. And the Donald has stood up and now seems to be pursuing a new strategy, or maybe a new old strategy, and that is one where he's trying to grow revenue faster than debt can be expanded. So I guess first question is, what does that mean from our point of view? And what is that bringing to markets? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the year started with anti-growth policies and all of those Doge, etc. Now, in sort of a rear view mirror, we don't hear much about it. And we had that change once the debt markets showed that they were unhappy with what they were what the administration was doing. Back into new old, which is spending more, expanding deficits, and trying to increase revenue. Now this part trying, and now the idea over here is to increase government's revenue and less reliance on government spending as a part of the GDP growth. The problem with this is that so far we've not seen any change in taxes. The only change we've seen is indirect tax, which is tariff, to kick in and add some more to those revenues. I think we touched upon this previously, that government spending now forms part 34% of the GDP growth. What does that mean? If you take away government spending, revenue itself is not enough. So if you look at the primary deficits, which we shared in our paper, Hard Money Soft Assets, from Congressional Budget Office, you see primary deficit running around 19-ish%, 19-20% over the next few years, which basically means that your revenue, tax revenue collection, is not enough to fund government expenses. So I think that's the area which the government or the Trump administration has to probably address, and they're trying to, but I don't see any practical policies in place that will help deliver that. So how do you bridge that gap? You bridge that gap by issuing more debt, which I think is so far what we have seen from these policies going back to sort of old new. So till that changes, I don't think there are any policies in place to help deliver that revenue piece. Till that is done, I think we'll have more and more debt. And one of the things we discussed in the past is that how much of this is in terms of, even if you reduce your interest expense, which we've seen the Fed is cutting interest rates, even if you reduce that part, you're still left with a lot of other bills or expenses that are still adding to that deficit. And you still have around, I think around rough estimates, 8.5 to 10 trillion to roll over in 2026. So do we really have a framework in place where we are adding or growing revenue in the US and for most of the developed markets? I don't think we have anything at this point.
No, it's interesting. And on that debt cycle and the refinancing of the debt, we've got to be getting towards the end of that cycle now. So we've seen a lot of liquidity pumped in, which has been, I suppose, the friend of risk assets pointing north for equities and other assets like cryptocurrencies and what have you, which has been fantastic, if you're simply looking at the price. But underneath the surface, quite a sort of stealthy maneuver is debasement, which is effectively reducing the purchasing power of paper money, as excess liquidity, excess money is flooding the system. So on the face of it, we've seen almost, I guess, an eerie sort of quiet by way of backdrop for equities. We've seen strong earnings. We've seen new all-time highs quite consistently. We're starting to see falling interest rates. The dollar fall has kind of steadied, which in some ways is good news. And I suppose all of which has been accompanied by the great sparkle and allure of artificial intelligence, AI. So, the backdrop on the face of it looks quite good, doesn't it? But, as you say, there's not a huge amount of real revenue being generated. And it's kind of interesting. And the debt market have been, maybe the private debt markets, I'm interested in your view on this, but seem to have been stretched. And we've seen SOFR spreads and all sorts of indicators pointing to some stress, which hasn't been obvious. And maybe that stress has brought about some market chop and volatility in the last week or so. What's been happening, in your opinion, underneath the surface, Asim?
Okay, so it's interesting. So I think there is a lot of chatter about private credit, and there's less concrete data that we can actually look at by the nature of these private markets. Now, last week we saw some tightening in liquidity. We saw SOFR spreads moving upwards, and the spread to federal fund or SOFR to increased, and also we saw a increased take up in a standby repo facility. But if you couple this up with a government shutdown, B Treasury general account buildup, and that there were funding requirements at the end of the month. So in terms of that, if you think about in terms of rebalancing, so I think that a lot of that was to do with that. And if you look at the timing of it was in the last 1 week of October when all of the repo facility was tapped into quite aggressively. That has, in my opinion, that has calmed down, and a lot of that was to do with the TGA buildup ahead of sort of month end and the expenses, the treasury expenses. Now this week, that pressure is easing. We have seen SOFR Fed fund spread that's narrowed. TGA buildup has slowed down, and it's back to under 20 basis points. But one of the things which is very important to mention here is that Fed's Williams also talked about liquidity and the shortfall in liquidity to be somewhere around 300 to 400 billion in reserves. And that's something which is noticeable, and I think that's something which will have an impact later on. And this is probably why the Fed has now stepped back from its QT program to add that liquidity. Now, going back to the private credit side, it's interesting to see that there were some comments from JP Morgan about cockroaches and probably more problems in the system. And I think that there will probably be more problems in the system. A lot of these structures are probably held by pension funds, by other banks, especially smaller banks. And one of the reasons for smaller banks to hold this is to, if you think about smaller banks' balance sheets, they have been sitting on high duration debt for over a few years now. And that high duration debt, if you think about unrealized losses on those high duration debt, it's in probably around $300 to $400 billion. Now, if you mark to market those high duration debt, you have a problem. And so they're carrying that debt. At the same time, they have to also think about profitability and to make money. And one of the ways to do that was to tap into higher risk assets. So in my opinion, there's a lot of that private credit participation coming from smaller and medium-sized banks, which will probably come to light next year sometime. So we just need to be a bit more careful that there is stress, and there's definitely, if you think about in isolation, these actions may not make much sense if you think about in isolation. But if you put it together, Fed stepping back from QT and thinking about adding another 20 billion a month into liquidity or buying bonds, so that's a change in reinvestment policy at the Fed. And you're also thinking about using monetary policy tools, i.e. cutting around 50 basis points in December. So all of these in a environment where your GDP is around 4-ish% and there's ample liquidity if you go by the popular narrative. Why is the Fed doing that? Is it only to address the labor market issues, or is it there is a wider issue underlying, which in my opinion there is, but we won't know till we start seeing some cracks in the credit market. So I think, yeah, so that's my understanding of things at this point. And the Fed is kind of going into not QE mode here. And if you combine that with your earlier comment about debt refi cycles, a lot of that debt that was taken out near or around COVID times was termed out to late 2020s. And if you think about that, debt is now, a lot of that debt is coming due in 2026. And one of the metrics to keep in mind here is that the debt to liquidity ratio, not debt to GDP, but debt to liquidity that refinances it is around 2x threshold in 2026.
Wow, okay.
So that is also a risk to, and how do we, and probably the Fed is already looking at it and trying to preempt that issue.
Yeah.
So that's the, I think that's in my opinion, private credit is for 2026.
Yeah, interesting backdrop. So let me just quickly try and summarize that then. And I'll also be sl maybe just slightly provocative in my next question. So forgive me ahead of time. So we're looking at rates coming down, and that certainly seems to be nailed on. The Fed is halting QT, quantitative tightening. So you could argue beginning once again to expand the balance sheet. Liquidity's coming in to help with some of the stresses in the interbank market. Does the sum of the parts then lead us to a Santa Claus rally as we approach the festive season?
I think it's a Santa Trump rally.
Goodness me, the mind boggles. Oh dear,
yeah,
Donald Trump.
I think it is. I think it is because in the short term, all of this is very positive for the risk assets, and we have seen those stymie checks also. And that, by the way, that stymie check thing, which Donald Trump talked about, $2,000 for Americans, every American, is a lot bigger than COVID stymie checks. So what does that do to your risk on sentiment? It just adds to it. And I think that's where probably most of this money, i.e., one will go probably into spending, the other will go into the speculation piece. So one of that's one. Second is benchmark chasing is a real thing. You get into November, December. November has 9 out of 10 years in the past 10 years performed really positively, and one of the reasons is that the fund managers start chasing benchmark and then liquidity easing. That's perfect. I mean, that's perfect timing. You're entering in November, liquidity is easing. Although we can talk about the bank reserves shortfall. And what the Fed needs to do probably in 2026. But as of this point, there's ample liquidity. And if the government shutdown is averted, or actually we are in government shutdown, but there's a deal on it, what does that mean? That means all of that issue in terms of TGA buildup over the last 1 month, some of that liquidity starts flowing back into the market. So that's another 125 to 200 billion. So
Yeah.
that liquidity, definitely, it points to an up move from here. And that's why we've added to our risk on sentiment.
No, makes very good sense. So, looking at from here, we are positive to the end of the year 2025, but here we are recording on the 11th of November. Are we able to look into 2026? Do we continue to see, clear blue sky and calm waters, or, could there be something on the other side of the year, which is, I don't know, brings more volatility?
I think there's always risks present. It's how we deal with. And as we enter 2026, it's a midterm election year. You would like, or Donald Trump would like, everything to be calm. You have a change in Fed chair, and possibly a more Trump's Fed will be stepping in. And I'm sure you've seen all these chatter about the Fed and the leadership of the Fed. So I think from what we've just discussed about debt refi cycle, a natural retracement after a good year and a parabolic move in the last 6, 7, 8 months now, you would expect some sort of a retracement. But it can, I think it can get a little bit volatile. If you take into account the debt refi cycle side of things and funding, especially funding and liquidity, a lot of the liquidity that is right now used in speculation and in stock market will probably start funneling towards refinancing the existing debt. And it's how the Fed and the policymakers, especially Treasury, deals with that. The other part which I see in 2026 is, as of right now, there's no change in quarterly refunding, i.e. Treasury's refunding schedule. But there's some chatter about long end being completely dry at this point. There's no supply into it. So if the Treasury manages to supply longer dated bonds into that demand, there's a chance that the long end of the yield curve can move up quite aggressively, and that can also impact this refinancing cycle. So yeah, these are the risks that we're looking at. But as I said, that the risks are always present. It's how the market deals with these risks when they appear.
Yeah, I mean, just let's dwell on the debt just for a moment. So, how is America going to fund the debt? I mean, because it's enormous. I mean, it's $37 trillion. I mean, the ongoing issuance of treasuries, question mark, who's going to buy that, and if the public and the foreign buying community decide to go on strike and say no, thank you, then I guess rules will have to change and pension schemes and banks and what have you will, I guess, be forced to buy the debt. Are we thinking about that? Is that, and of course, there's the Genius Act, which was just approved in America, which allows banks to issue stable coins on behalf of the Fed from 2026. So do you think the sum of the parts can service the debt, or what are we thinking?
I think exactly that. It's and I think you summed it up perfectly. It's also not probably not 37 trillion refinancing. It's probably going to be around 10 trillion every year.
Okay.
And lack of revenues means that you're getting into a sort of 37 trillion sustainable. When we say sustainable, it's where your revenue growth and your interest expense almost is the same. Now, the funding side of it is, we talked about this a few years ago, financial repression. Where you're forcing banks and pension funds by policy to buy your own debt. And I think that's where we're heading. There's around 7.5 trillion at the moment sitting in money market funds that will probably help fund some of it. But the stablecoin aspect is very interesting. You buy stablecoins to speculate, and in a sense, it's speculation stablecoins, be it JPMs, be it Solana, be it Ethereum, whatever it is. But those stablecoins are actually buying the underlying treasuries. But how does their pricing mechanism works? We don't know. But this will also for the wider world. So if the wider world has stopped buying treasuries, US paper, but if you're repackaging it as a stablecoin and saying, oh, look, we've got a new thing. So maybe that's an indirect route for the wider world to start bringing money into the US through those stable coins. And I think that's exactly what it's trying to do.
Yeah, it's fascinating. All right, let's move away from the US, and we always start with US, of course, because it's such an important and dominant part of the global equity market backdrop. But global equities outside of US have had a pretty good year. Europe's done well. China is looking very strong, and Japan seems to be rebounding once again with a new prime minister. So what are our thoughts? Maybe just take us around, Europe, Japan, China, and any other markets you might want to mention, but what are we thinking?
I think we are perfectly positioned in UK, Europe. Europe's slightly concerned about, especially if you look at DAX in Germany, it's been consolidating for the last seven odd months now. But the rest of the Europe has done okay-ish. It's done okay. Japan was something which we looked at and we exited at a good point. And after that, we had around 20% correction in Japan. I didn't expect Japan to do this strongly. And one of the reasons probably was to look at the central bank and the central bank's monetary policy trilemma. And they still have that, by the way. They still have that issue where you've got a CPI reading at around 3.5, 3.6. You can't raise rates because if you do raise rates, you've got a problem with the fiscal side. So, but the equity markets are booming on the back of liquidity, and a lot of, and in my opinion, a lot of that liquidity is coming from weaker dollar, i.e., from outside Japan into Japan, and that's what's helping it. China is probably a different story. China has pumped in a lot more money over the last few months into Chinese system, and a lot of that money has found its way into risk assets. Still nowhere near in the property side, but the risk assets have definitely moved up, and a lot of that is to do with really nicely positioned AI stocks, Tencent and Alibaba and all that. If you look at the pricing compared to American ones, it's probably around 1/10. And I think that's what has helped. My only concern with the Chinese side of things, I mean, yes, they have moved away from the policy of, common prosperity and moved into, okay, let's do a bit more targeted side. And my only concern is that this geopolitical issue between America and China can develop into some sort of capital issue where you're basically stopped from investing in China. It's not happened yet. It's not happened as of right now. But I think if everything else fails, that's probably what I think the US US administration will probably do. But right now, I think China is doing very well. MSCHI is done very well. We are exposed to Chinese stocks through EMRD, which is emerging markets. And I think I posted last night that it's up around 47%.
Wow.
So it's done pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
The UK, on the other hand, I think UK, despite all of these noise about, and not just noise, but we're waiting for this budget on 26. It's done okay, I think. If you look at UK 100 stocks, which is FTSE 100, not the UK Inc., but the UKX has done pretty good, and I think the upside target still remains another 5-ish% from here.
Yeah, surprising, isn't it? You know, the sort of decoupling of the economy from the stock market. I mean, I guess FTSE 100, a lot of their earnings are derived from outside of the UK. But just looking at the index, it's had a strong year, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. The other thing, I mean, think about this. There's another wider, I wouldn't say issue, but wider trend now where governments are encouraging people to actually put the money into stock market. Now, if you think about UK cash ISA, there's a suggestion out there to cut cash ISA from 20,000 to around 10 to 12,000, and push those savings into stock-based ISAs or stock market. So a lot of that to do and opening up CETNs, which is your crypto ETNs for retail. A lot of that is to do with, okay, now take your money and go into speculation.
Yeah, no, interesting. Interesting. Okay, I guess we should also touch on fixed income and other diversifiers. I mean, fixed income hasn't really been the place to be, I suppose, during this year. And maybe let's just touch on our positioning and our thoughts on that. And then can we just look at other diversifiers? I think in gold and precious metals and commodities in particular, it would be remiss not to mention gold, of course. But let's start with fixed income. What are you thinking?
If I mean fixed income from since 2023, we have been short duration fixed income, and we continue to remain short duration at this point. And a lot of that is on the back of the thesis that we put out, that we are thinking about revenue versus expenses at the government level and what that can do to yields. And we're also aware of the fact that there is a yield curve control in all the developed markets now. But we still remain short duration because that's the part which is now controlled by, or always been controlled by, central banks. And we see central bank changes, i.e. changes in the interest rates and the cutting at the short end. So we remain short duration. We are slightly concerned, I would say, at the makeup of these debt refinancing. A lot of that is shorter duration, not longer duration. And what happens if the longer duration debt comes into the market? It's extremely highly sensitive at this point. And if it does, what does that mean for fixed income? And this is probably why this is what is driving our short duration stance. I mean, to one extent, I would also say that I would rather put money into cash at this point and earn a little bit of yield than to have a long duration fixed income exposure.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. To gold, it's had a glittering year, hasn't it? It's been sparkling bright. Further to go, debasement trade. What are our thoughts on gold?
Yeah, debasement trade. It is all metals. So you've got precious metals. So you've got gold and silver. If you look at that, it's a debasement trade, and it's across the fiat currencies in the developed markets. There can be narrative behind it that China is buying a lot of gold, India is buying a lot of gold, Russia is buying a lot of gold, etc. That's fine. But the prices are set in dollar, and it's more dollars to an ounce of gold. That's how you look at it. There's more. It's more to do with debasement. And I think that's what the market is also sensing, that there's more to come. There's, as John used to say, Tina is in town. So it's probably that. And I think there's more to go on gold. The only problem with this is that if you have now, I think it retreated a little bit, retraced a little bit. This kind of price action usually invites a very volatile retracement. And if you have that, you're okay. We are positioned in gold and silver through miners, and we're also positioned in commodities. I think commodities are doing well. We've got a wider commodity fund that we're invested in, and I think we've got around 8-ish% of our exposure in commodities, and gold and silver.
Okay,
So if
very
you
good.
take that.
I was going to say very good. I think we've had a good year in terms of, you know, selection of our diversifiers. Gold and silver particularly has done well for us. So, you know.
Absolutely. As of yesterday, we have added our copper exposure as well. We think copper is one that was lagging behind, and now copper should start moving upwards. So I think commodities in general, I think they are probably going to do a lot better in the next few years.
All right. Okay. So here we are, end of the year, almost. almost, but not quite. And we've made some changes at the portfolio level. Can you just talk us through the changes you've made, the reasons why, and is this a tactical move or a longer-term strategic implementation? What do you think?
So I think two changes we've made recently. One is on this recent weakness last week, we've added a little bit more to our US exposure. We still remain underexposed compared to our peers and to MSCI ACWI, but we have added more risk to our US exposure. And we believe, given all the different parts of the information we just discussed, upside from here in the US is probably around 8 to 10%. As and when required, and when things change, we'll obviously remove that exposure. And the second exposure we've added is to copper, which we believe is doing okay. It's done all the right things in the last 2 or 3 weeks now, and we expect copper to do very well. And that's in our GMP portfolio.
Okay, that's super. Asim, we've had a good year. So on behalf of investors and advisors, thank you very much. Certainly relative to peers and in absolute terms too. So good numbers, good outcomes, a good year for Alpha Beta Partners. Let's leave it on a high, and we'll try and, come back and have another chat maybe before the end of the year if there's something to discuss. So look forward to speaking with you soon, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Andrew.
This content is distributed by Alpha Beta Partners, a trading name of AB Investment Solutions, which is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. This podcast is provided for information purposes only and does not constitute investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell any financial instruments. The views expressed are those of the presenters at the time of recording and may, of course, be subject to change. Retail clients should always seek advice from their financial advisor and should not rely on the content as the basis of any investment decision.